A very good evening to you all, and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening, we'll talk about the opening of the 70th session of the UN General Assembly.
Well, I think the three processes that have been taken.
And with us tonight is my colleague, Abdushakur Aboud of VOA Swahili Service. Thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Momentarily, we'll be joined by another colleague, Blessing Zulu from VOA's Zimbabwe Service. And we're also joined by Mr. Dewa Mazinga. He's a senior researcher at Africa Division, Human Rights Watch. He joins us by phone from Johannesburg. Good evening, Mr. Mazinga.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on the program.
You're very much welcome. And as I said earlier on, our topic tonight is the UN General Assembly. This is the 70th regular session of the UN General Assembly. is ongoing in New York here in the US. And this particular session is very interesting in that His Holiness the Pope, Pope Francis, will address the UN General Assembly. And on 25th, 27th September, the summit will adopt the post-2015 development agenda that will convene, and the general debate for the session will take place from 28th to 6th October. Let me start here in studio with Abdushakur. Every year, we have this ritual of the sessions opening in New York, while leaders are flying in and discussing this and that, making this and that pledge. How important is this session, these kinds of sessions?
It's an important session because the United Nations, as we know, it was created to bring peace and development in the world. It gives the chance of member countries to come and express their wishes and their pledges, as you said, to express what has happened during the year mostly. And the most exciting part is the week where all heads of state have like 10 to 15 minutes to give a speech on what they feel is success in their country or what the challenges are or what they have to do in completing the goals of the United Nations. But at the same time, in every summit, there is always a major issue which they tackle. Like this year, I think the major issue which is going to be discussed is the MDGs, which was approved some time back, and it's coming to an end this year. And now the UN has already called in changing the MDGs to sustainable development to see what can be going along with that. MDGs, there were 8 goals, and now I understand there are going to be 17 goals, and probably it'll be easy for people to reach. But one challenge will be that the MDGs was supposed to reduce poverty in the world. Mm-hmm. But the question is, has poverty been reduced to that amount? That's one of the things where the leaders are going to talk. But another thing is that the meeting is taking place at a time when we are experiencing the biggest crisis of refugees and migrants since probably World War II. Mm-hmm. So that's another major issue facing leaders. What are they going to say and how are they going to deal with it is what everybody is going to watch, because we understand very much that many people are saying the world leaders have been quiet for quite a long time looking on in this situation, and now he's gone overboard. So those are the things which give the chance to leaders to talk about.
They were in Johannesburg. First of all, the value of these sessions, and what are you looking for in this particular one?
Well, the challenge is that there is not much practical value, especially for the people on the ground back here in Africa, in the cities and in the rural areas, who may not know really what goes on in New York. And also, one of the major problems with African leaders is that they want to associate with the pomp and fanfare of the UN to make bombastic statements about their wishes, which are not related to what they do on the ground. And they also take these as huge opportunities for shopping in New York, for having huge delegations. If you look on average, African presidents or heads of state, they take a huge delegation that is not useful for the purposes of the work of the UN. And they talk about things that are not happening on the ground because they want to associate and to be seen on a world platform. So in reality, Unfortunately, this does not represent much for the people of Africa who are struggling in poverty and who are looking for solutions to improve their daily lives.
I see. My colleague, Blessing Zuri, has joined me too. But before I come to you, Blessing, you talked to the president of the 69th session of the UN General Assembly. Let's first play what he said, then we get your reaction at the other end of the thing. He was trying to explain what has been achieved. You asked him to explain what has been achieved in the last session.
Well, I think the three processes that have been taking place in this, what I think is a very historic year and session, the most important achievement is the agreement on the new development agenda, the Sustainable Development Agenda 2015-2030. Mm-hmm. This is a holistic, inclusive, transformative, and really big agenda to develop the world, because it encompasses all the three dimensions of development, the social, the developmental, and the environmental. So that's the main achievement. But the second, and I think most important process is that you can have all these grand plans, but if you don't find the wherewithal, the money to finance this agenda, then it remains on the piece of paper it's written. So we've been successful in putting together a financing for development conference and framework. And this took place in July in Addis Ababa. It was extremely successful. So I'm delighted that those two main processes have been successful in the same year, but maybe not in the same session. I hope that we can reach agreement in Paris in December on climate change. Yeah.
And how is Africa, for example, likely to benefit from that?
You see, the sustainable development agenda is largely for developing countries. And so Africa comes in as a developing country. But also within that agenda, there are programs for landlocked countries, least developed countries, and that are of a special nature and are receiving special attention under this framework. For example, in the case of landlocked, least developed countries, the commitment to ODA, official development assistance, for that group of countries will be cut out, and it will be 0.15%. percent to 2.20% of GNI of developed countries. So there are specific areas, but there are also broad and general areas that this whole agenda encompasses from which Africa will benefit.
I was Sam Kutesa, Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs and President of the 69th session of the General Assembly, UN General Assembly. Blessing, you just had him there. Grandiose ideas as ever in those sessions. But does this actually translate to the common man on the continent?
I hope so. I hope they say if you don't learn from history, you risk repeating it with all its imperfections. So we hope from the last session, I think they realize whatever mistake that they had and are going forward. I think the major issue is that most of these programs are usually hit by donor fatigue. And in that interview, he said that they are people who are willing to come on board to fund those projects because, with the world's best economies not performing well, China, the U.S., for example, it's difficult to fund such projects. You might be having good intentions, but without money, it does not work. So we hope this time around they will be able to walk the talk, as it were.
I see. Dewa, your reaction and comment.
Well, I'm not as hopeful because the reality on the ground is that even when we have those resources at Africa's disposal, there is rampant corruption. We have massive leakages in terms of illicit financial flows from from Africa, from the developing world. And therefore, to talk of development in that sense without a clear commitment to blocking the leakages, to ending corruption, there is no real commitment that I have seen in terms of steps to end corruption. So even when there are flaws in terms of donor funds, what we have experienced, what we know for sure in Africa is that the bulk of those funds will not benefit those on the ground who are supposed to be the recipients. And that remains a huge challenge. And one of the problems with global platform of the UN is that a number of its resolutions are really, at best, soft law and not enforceable. And therefore, accountability cannot be traced. There are no mechanisms to track, monitor, and enforce. These are just goals, whether they are Millennium Development Goals or now the 2030 Sustainable Development Agenda. It is not backed by hard law which can be enforced. And this leaves most African leaders at liberty to ignore or to pronounce on them when they wish as promises, but nothing tangible and hard to present to their peoples.
Shakur, he mentioned the crucial point there. There are people, some commentators, who actually assert that some leaders from especially Africa and other developing countries are not serious at all. They just fly in, jet in with their jets here, doze off, make a 10-minute speech, and that's the end of the thing.
This thing has been happening year every year. We talk about Africa spending a lot on visits abroad. That's a major problem. Major problems, which is causing a lot of expenditure for African countries. But I think what he talked much more important is the fact that on the ground, it's a question I've asked a number of officials. It's true they come up with these big, beautiful programs, but you go on the ground, you hardly see half of it being done. And a good example of all this is that we're talking of reducing poverty, getting youth to work. But the good example is the number of youth running Africa going to Europe, crossing the Mediterranean. It's only because of the refugees in Iraq where the media and everybody is concerned. But for the past 5 to 10 years, young Africans are dying across the Mediterranean trying to go and look for good life in Europe or to the United States. So you ask yourself, if these programs are working, why are these kids running away? I understand there is a problem of war in Africa. There is dictatorship. You can talk of Eritrea. You can talk of Congo. There is war. But you ask yourself, people from Senegal, where there has been democracy, people are running away. You are seeing people from Ghana, they're running away. There's democracy. So you ask yourself, what is happening? Right now, you see a report in Ghana, the judiciary is in problems. A number of judges are to be brought to court because of corruption. So those are simple examples where you see that the leaders are not in touch, with the reality. So what has happened is that the United Nations is a forum, yes, because it's a organization to bring them there to talk about it, but there is no control, there is no auditing of what the UN is doing. A lot of projects, to the point where experts are saying the United Nations international organizations are just preparing themselves, accepting these projects to keep their jobs, because if there is no cert aid, these organizations would not exist, because most of the experts take half of the money which is allocated for development. You hear experts from the United Nations for development, experts for law, as if Africans, we don't have doctors, we don't have experts. And that's where the problem is. There must be a general reshuffle of how UN is working so that we can stop talking about this all the time.
Blessings, you agree?
Yeah, I think I agree that there is a need for serious reform at the United Nations. Things have not been working for a very long time, and actually for many, many years. And, you know, just talking about Africa and the need to reduce poverty, I think sometimes you know, Africa has got resources. This is what is also worrying, apart from the donor funds. I mean, Africa itself has got huge resources at its disposal that are not being utilized to help the poor, for example. You go to countries like Zimbabwe, it's not at war. But if you look at the national budget, the majority of the budget is allocated to the army, to the police, which are essentially like repressive state apparatus. Health, you know, there was a declaration in Abuja, you know, that at least more and more funds should be channeled towards health. But that is not being done. Everyone is focusing on the army and the police to stay in power. So even Africa's own resources are not being well utilized to benefit the ordinary people.
Well, gentlemen, hold your thoughts. Let's take a short break. We'll be back again to discuss to continue our discussion of the 70th session of the UN General Assembly.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the 70th session of the UN General Assembly. Our panelists are my colleagues, Blessing Zulu, VOA Zimbabwe Service, Abdul Shakur Abod of VOA Swahili Service, and Dewa Mazinga, a senior researcher, Africa Division, Human Rights Watch. I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, here in Studio 9. Gentlemen, I want to push this one around the table, beginning with Dewa in Johannesburg there. There are people who have argued that given what we've just discussed so far, why wouldn't the United Nations session begin tackling the issue of governance? Because without good governance, all these declarations of fighting poverty, of health, can't be implemented.
Well, I think it all goes back to the issue of the need for reform within the UN, and that, you know, the United Nations itself is a collective of different governments, and these governments would resist efforts to talk of governance because they are the rogue elements. You know that there is also a side where you have UN offices and agencies in different countries, particularly in the developing world in Africa, where as expatriates they live like kings and queens, and they then take the considerations that if you are to continue to have access to a particular country or to enjoy that kind of relationship, then you need to say less in terms of speaking truth to power. And we have seen it in a number of countries where the UN locally has been complicit in the abuses by not holding governments accountable, by not requesting for accountability on key issues of human rights abuses, for example. So this is would then go upwards in terms of the ladder and prevent genuine reforms that would lead to a serious tackling of governance issues. There is a focus, it appears, on talking about, you know, the soft issues where everyone is happy and does not feel offended and is not held accountable.
Yeah, I think joining what our colleague is saying, the reforms in the UN, is that we are forgetting that the UN was formed some years back when we didn't have the situation we have today. UN was formed after the First World War following declaration that it is to bring peace and development in the world. But today, what is happening, UN is used as a platform to help development, but there is no structure, there is no mechanism to follow up what is being done. There is no mechanism, as we can see, is that if a program has been proved, the implementation, there is no organ which is there to stand by and audit to see if the thing is gone through and to accept what has been done and to punish those who have not been doing properly. So it's all depending on the countries itself. And most of the part, one will say, is it the rich countries which have to have organizations which have to do the control work, because today if the United States give money for a development in DRC, who's going to watch and see that that projects go through? And that's what is lacking in many parts of it. So at the UN, when they come by there, the time they sit at the UN is so short. I don't think so they have agendas to discuss. There has been a lot of efforts to do reforms, but the reforms are not going through. Just take the Security Council. They want to add up countries that Africa is not represented in the permanent council. Mm-hmm. You don't have Asia. You don't have the developing, arising countries like Brazil or India. And all that, that formed the BRICS, the countries which form Brazil, South Africa, India, and China, to counter what the World Bank is doing or the United Nations. And that's what is supposed to be done, is to bring reform and to watch out and see what is being done on the field. And that is lacking.
Talking of the permanent five, Amtrak was referring to, there are those who maintain that things work in the UN if they are initiated or if they are brought forward by the permanent five, those veto UN security members that have veto powers. When they want something, it gets done. But the congregation of other 100 or some other leaders are almost irrelevant.
Yeah, I think that is an area that needs to be addressed. Because it has been overtaken by events. And if you look at those big five countries, you know, even a situation that requires urgent attention, they are always divided, even if thousands and thousands of people are being massacred. You have the situation in Rwanda, for example. You wonder where the UN was. Burundi, you know, it's tragic, you know. And there is also the fight between US, China, and Russia. They all have their own selfish interests, you know. And at the end of the day, they end up leaving out the developing nations. And this is why, you know, there's been so much criticism of the United Nations. It's going back to the failed project that was the League of Nations, which was called a toothless bulldog. I think this is the same thing that we are seeing with the United Nations. But going back to that interview I did with Kutesa, you know, it's one of the things that he actually pushed through to be adopted despite criticism and resistance from the US, China, and Russia to reform the UN so that developing countries, like Shaku is saying, and other developing countries can actually have a representative, not only the permanent five members who I think have not done what is expected of them.
How do you see that, the idea of that of reform, especially expanding the permanent five, and including maybe somebody from Africa, and then I don't know. What do you think?
I think it might not be the solution. It's necessary, it's needed to democratize the United Nations. But in terms of effective peacekeeping and effective mechanisms to prevent conflict, what would be needed is to strengthen regional institutions so that you have a strong and robust African Union that really acts on the continent to ensure that there is peace and security, so that at the level of the apex of the UN, it's much easier to deal with these issues. But when you have very weak institutions at a regional level, it means it becomes very difficult to resolve these issues. But certainly, it would be a step in the right direction for that broader aspect of UN reform. But for effective work to promote peace, to ensure stability, to lead with the development agenda, where we need strength and political will and proper structures, is at regional level to begin with.
I see. Shakul, in the last few seconds, do you see any reform happening? Because it seems the UN, the way it's set up, the status quo is almost meant to stay.
I think so. The reforms, they will do small reforms, but I doubt it there will be any major reforms which can change things to see difference on the ground. Leaders will come there and talk about whatever they want to talk, but on the ground, I don't think so there will be any reforms, because it's a huge undertaking and it demands a lot of political will and economical will to change the United Nations, because the people in the United Nations themselves, they're fighting against that. And then in Africa, when you look at it, look at the case now, you're having Burkina Faso, the leaders wanting to go for third term and all that. There is a lot of issues which need to be put straight. You need strong leadership. And that, at this moment, I think, is lacking around the world.
Talking of strong leadership, Blessing, it's a bit ironical that on the stage at the UN National General Assembly, you find there a leader who is a dictator, a tin pot dictator who is there, somebody has been power for 30 years is there, a leader of military coup is there, leaders of democracies are there. In such a situation, how can you have a fair discussion and agree on something that's tangible?
I think that is always the problem, which actually goes back to the issue of enforcing whatever resolution that they would have agreed upon. I think that's a major, major weakness for the United Nations that has to be addressed. I don't think it should be a free-for-all when it comes to addressing the United Nations, as we have seen, you know, people with... we have committed atrocities are still accommodated at the United Nations. You know, that defeats the whole purpose of trying to bring democracy and empower the ordinary people. So at the end of the day, you see that the UN seems to be serving the interests of the leaders, not we, the people.
Last 30 seconds, Mr. Masinga.
Well, we are a long way to go, but certainly the paradigm shift needs to be that of moving away from serving the interests of leaders, many of whom are dictators, to serving the interests of the people. I think this is where the push needs to be, to say if we have dictators who are not accountable to their people, who are abusing rights, they have no business being at the UN addressing that platform. And there must be a mechanism to exclude them and not to be apologetic and accommodating. We need to speak truth to power and ensure accountability at that platform.
Any one of you seeing that happening in the near future?
I don't think so. Not really. Not really.
Maybe one day, but you know, I don't know. Not in our lifetime.
I don't think so.
Because it's going to be the audacity of hope, guys.
It's unfortunate that we are all so pessimistic about this, but I think there is efforts being done to do some changes.
That's true. That's
true. Think it is, but it's a long way to go.
Yeah,
because it's been many years, and things, the more they have stayed, the more they have remained the same. And people, there are many other countries and leaders who are trying to do their best to help mankind and improve everything.
Yes.
But then you can't improve, help mankind when among the players there are people who are not
willing to do
it. Yeah, which is another problem actually for Africa, that you are trying to push for reform at the UN, but you cannot bring changes in Africa itself. You have the AU, there are many corrupt leaders and undemocratic countries there, and then you say you want a permanent seat at the United Nations. It defeats the whole purpose.
It's about Well, gentlemen, we're out of time, and that's all we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank my colleagues, Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service, Abdul Shakur Abud of VOA Swahili Service, and thank you, Dewa Mazinga, Senior Research, Africa Division, Human Rights Watch. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Our producer was Kwame Ofori, and our engineer tonight was Pete Handley. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still listen to it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to it again. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.